a lot of the time, many teachers just like stick to like the TEKS or whatever it is, and then they just focus on that, and then they don't even, it feels like to us at least, that it's not like they're putting in any effort. And so it just feels like if you're not going to put in any effort, then neither are we.
This is All Things Education, a podcast where three-decade teachers discuss what they know.
The good, the not so good, and the continuous opportunity for high quality education in Texas.
Join us for a smart conversation as we dig deep into the issues that affect us all in and around our great state.
And here are those three lively instructors now.
Welcome back to our ongoing chat about all things education. I'm Matthew Balter, an electives teacher in Austin, Texas, joined by my esteemed co-hosts.
My name is Lance Barish. I teach high school math up here in Dallas-Fort Worth.
And my name is Natalie Adias, and I am back in the saddle, folks. I am back in the classroom teaching art in San Antonio.
Whoop, whoop. Those lucky
all
kids.
All right. Yes. Yes, we are back at it, you all. Or in my case, 2 days away from being back at it in the classroom. How's everyone feeling with their summer coming to an end or the start of the school year?
Oh, I mean, how many synonyms can I come up with for elated, ecstatic,
oh!
happy, joyful, amazing? It's so good to be back in the classroom. I actually miss it when I'm gone. I'm not one of these teachers that has a countdown to summer break, as we've talked about before. And I, you know what? I get a little bit of cabin fever in the summer. I get a little bit of a lost my way. What am I supposed to do when I can't go to the classroom and teach algebra, you know, which is everybody's favorite activity, including my 90 or so new kids. How about you, Natalie?
It's high energy for sure. I need not worry about how long it's going to take me to fall asleep at night, because as soon as my head hits the pillow, I am out. But my days are full and busy and fast and fun. It's been a lot of fun to get back in the classroom, away from spreadsheets and back to more FaceTime with kids who make me laugh. And you guys know I love to laugh. So there's been
Oh,
a lot
yeah.
of that this week.
Laughter is important, especially at this time. Well, as a classroom teacher who's two days away from the real grind, I can't tell you if I'm ready or not to be back. But as a parent of a 13-year-old, I can assure you that I am ready for my son to get back to school.
I hear that.
The long summer of teenage parenting has run its course, and I can confide in you all that he is, at this point, bored out of his mind, and he needs some structure. So I'm really excited about that.
I bet.
And if he's bored out of his mind during the summer, then school must be the antidote, right?
Yeah,
it's
well,
gotta
that
be.
Actually ties right into our topic today, actually, Lance. So in January of 2025, I came across this article in the New York Post titled, "The Kids Are Not All Right." And the article talks a lot about the rise of teen boredom over the past 3 to 5 years, attributing the increase of boredom to screen addiction and social isolation. And not surprisingly, the symptoms of boredom coincide with an increase in adolescent depression. As a parent and as an educator, this sparked my own interest, and I looked into the data a little bit more, and it's unequivocally supported by every national health and resource organization that I came across. Kids are more bored today and suffering more from that boredom than they were 10 years ago.
I find that particularly interesting because you would think with the increase in technology and access to technology and all of this constant stimulus, that the opposite would be true, but instead it seems to be breeding more of what maybe was originally thought to be a problem. They're bored, let's give them more. Let's up the ante. Interesting that they're more
Yeah,
bored.
it kind of reminds me of that adage about how the more connected we are, the more isolated we feel when we bring in, comparisons to others or seeing things I might not want to see that I never would have seen before the age of social media, that type of stuff. And I also was really noticing that timeline, Matthew, from the article, the past 3 to 5 years, because of course we did have a global pandemic right before that or concurrent with that. And I know that as a teacher in education, sometimes we treat that pandemic as a boogeyman that we slayed, that's gone, that's passed. And yet, of course, here we're still seeing some of the effects of what happened in 2020.
Yeah, and the article in the New York Post talks a lot about how it's hard to say that if the pandemic spark was the spark or the catalyst to this, but it was debt or if this has been sort of like a long time coming or sort of like a growing trend pandemic, but the pandemic definitely had a huge sort of like impact on this idea of adolescent boredom. But anyway, as a teacher and as a for the sake of this podcast, I wanted to see if the same thing was true for school. Were statistics showing a rise of boredom in the classroom? Well, the answer, unfortunately, is yes. That there has been a sort of like steady trend in largely survey data that shows a rise in teen boredom in the classroom, which led me to the question, why? Why are kids more bored in school now than they were 10 or 20 years ago? I regret to inform you that I didn't find all that much, or at least nothing that was surprising or all that convincing in terms of like an answer to this. But then I started thinking, well, why is school boring? Statistically, somewhere around 60% of students consistently feel bored in school. When I ask my son how was school, 9 out of 10 times he says boring. Most of my students say the same thing. Why though? If you think about it, school should be anything but boring. If an alien came down to this planet and inquired about the human race and its habits and systems and so forth, and was explained school, a place where children go during the day to learn about all kinds of things, that's free for everyone, where they get to travel to different rooms and have these experts teach them about various things and allow them to interact and explore concepts, to intellectually develop and play and socialize, you'd think that school would be amazing. Why is it boring? Despite the rise of boredom in the classroom, this isn't a recent phenomenon either. In fact, it's a conception deeply ingrained in our culture. Music, books, TV shows, movies so often portray school as being not just boring, but painfully boring. Why is school boring? And does it have to be that way? That's our topic for today. First question, did you guys growing up find school to be boring? When you were in those middle school, high school years, what was your take on school?
When I look back on my career as a student, I remember really still loving learning in elementary school because it felt fun, it felt accessible, it felt entertaining and engaging, and I was excited to learn then. And somewhere in middle school and high school, I got bored with the learning, and it became more about extracurricular activities and social connections and things like that. I was very involved, but I was never in middle school and high school. I struggled to be engaged academically, for sure. I did not find the learning, I wasn't compelled by the learning.
Yeah, I really liked school. You could probably tell that by now, listeners. I was a school kid. But it wasn't so cut and dry. I really liked the classes that I really liked, and I really didn't like the classes that I really didn't like, if that makes sense.
Yep.
But whenever I go a little bit under the surface of that claim, it actually I can poke some holes in it because it's not so binary, right? I mean, I did love my math classes, but I also had really good math teachers. And so I think the teacher makes a huge difference. I think the teacher can bring alive a subject that you're not interested in or give you some negative feelings about a subject that you were previously loving, you know? So
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
quite so caught between two poles as I just described it.
Yeah, absolutely. For myself, I kind of between the two of you, I really enjoyed school in elementary, and in middle school, I found it extremely boring. Throughout middle school, I really did not like being there in the classroom. And in high school, it really kind of depended, like Lance, on the class subject and the teacher. Some classes I was really excited to go to. And then others I was just sort of like staring at the clock the whole time, watching it tick down slowly. But in hopes of finding some kind of answer to this big overarching question, I reached out to two of my former students, Jameson and Matthew, and they happily agreed to be interviewed on a topic that I must say made them quite excited. We get to talk about how bad, we get to talk bad about school and how boring it is. Well, yeah. I gave them a few basic guidelines, and yeah, we'll listen to a little bit of what they have to say. But before I play the interview, I do want to preface this. Matthew and Jameson are what I'd consider happy students. They're both highly intelligent, they get good grades. Jameson's on the basketball team, Matthew's on the golf team, they have strong social network. They don't get into trouble or too much trouble with teachers. They are, in fact, curious, academically curious. Matthew and Jameson are what any teacher would consider to be great students. If anyone should love school and not be bored, it's them. But that's not the case. They don't love school and they are bored in the classroom, often very bored. Why is school boring?
Overarching thing is that school, as in like the whole thing, is not boring, but like what we learn specifically is boring. The environment really isn't because, like, I mean, you see your friends all the time. That's the main appeal of school, but it's a problem because whenever students are like not engaged in learning, there's no incentive for them to even like try or like listen to instruction well. I feel like a lot of the time, many teachers just like stick to like the teks or whatever it is, and then they just focus on that, and then they don't even, it feels like to us at least, that it's not like they're putting in any effort. And so it just feels like if you're not going to put in any effort, then neither are we.
I think school is boring because of the whole propaganda. And I think that teachers actually push a more forced agenda, which helped this propaganda. For example, even a big, pro not a so big problem like not having phones may seem big to students because it's so pushed and forced. And so I think it's all these kind of little details about school and that the teachers honestly focus too much on some small things instead of helping to push for more engagement and more important things. One part of the learning process that's missing is letting students be themselves. And to what I said earlier, when students like already feel pressured by all these small little rules that they're not used to following, what would make them want to stay engaged, or what would make them want to actually pay attention or have a more open mind to why school is fun?
To build off what he said, because, like, I mean, we're in an age of school where it's like every student has their own needs that need to be met. And so we need to teach in a way that like lets everyone be themselves, lets everyone do what they need to learn the material properly.
Like Matthew said, they need to diversify how learning can be percepted and how people should engage with students. And like to for students to help find kids find the way they like to learn. So for example, in an English class, it could mean that you don't just work on a packet or you don't just work in groups. So some people could work in groups if that helps them, while other people could do a worksheet by themselves if that's the best way they learn.
I personally think some classes are definitely more fun than others, but how fun a class is depends really on two things: how the teacher teaches it, and it does matter a little bit what subject it is, but not as much, because obviously people would rather say they'd be in PE than English class.
And I
But
think
in terms of how the teacher teaches it, if the teacher, like I was saying earlier, does the bare minimum where they just stick to the book, give you packets all the time, then it's not going to be a class where you look forward to going to it every day.
and so yeah, to lead off that, I think it actually goes into a half situation. I think half of it is that it's more socially accepted and more so among your peers that like you're going to want to do PE more than math or PE more than language arts or a certain interest more than a core class. So I think just the perception is part of that. Now, I do think the other part of that is actually about the teachers, is about how the teachers make the kids feel a certain way about a class. Instead of just teaching it to get it into their minds, I think a way that makes it more engaging or for students to like it more is when teachers make the kids almost feel a passion about it. Like the teachers come off as they feel passionate about it. And so the students want to feel passionate about it and learn about it too.
I'm so grateful these two volunteered to speak on this particular topic because I think the student voice is so necessary here. We got a lot of stuff to sort of like unpack, I think, with what they had to say there. What do you all think? Do you agree, disagree, somewhere in between with what Matthew and Jameson mentioned there?
Yeah, I think Matthew and Jameson are telling us what we have heard in our careers from day one as educators, which is the importance of engaging instruction. To stand at the front of the room and point to a board or read bullet points off of a slide is not it for almost any kind of learner. There are a faction of people who can absorb information and turn around and regurgitate it. But I appreciate them naming it and Matthew for you bringing their voice to the conversation because you're absolutely right. They are our purpose to be there. And as instructors, I think that's the part that we need to take so seriously is how we keep the content engaging for them to even want to hear what we have to say. And we talk all the time about relationships and how that is key, and it is. But also, I feel like this really points to the need for instructional expertise and as professionals, our growth and our pursuit of that for the sake of our kids and their learning, which is a lot of what we talked about in our previous episode about teacher preparation and how that's shifting toward more intensive time directly in front of students like Matthew and Jameson, who we are serving in our classrooms. So I totally agree with what they're saying. I respect what they're saying in the sense that they don't hate being there among their peers and even among some of their teachers,
Right.
but they want to learn is what I'm hearing almost. And that's the challenge. For us is how do we make them want to learn?
Yeah, I first of all, awesome, very articulate young men. Really cool to hear from them. And like Natalie said, we would be totally derelict in our duties if we didn't listen to what they had to say. I found myself nodding pretty much the whole time. Especially when they kind of hinted at something which I mentioned earlier, which is that it doesn't have to be so clear cut that the subject that you like is going to be the class that you like. I can't remember which young man it was. I think it was Jameson that was saying it's not necessarily just that I like PE. English can be awesome too if I have a teacher that's enthusiastic, that's not just giving me a packet, that's not doesn't seem like he's going through some rote script and is bringing it alive. I think that the role of the teacher is just so paramount. So love to hear from those young men.
Yeah, I agree on all those fronts. I think the harder question, though, is, well, why isn't that the case? Right? I mean, I'm thinking back to my own time in the classroom and, you know, this sort of like career that I've had for 15 years of being in the classroom. And it's not the case that, you know, more that classes are always going to be super engaging and that you're going to have these super engaging teachers, right?
Well, one was kind of hinted at by your student Matthew when he mentioned the teeks. I was blown away that he said teeks for our listeners. That's the state standards for whatever the subject is that you're teaching, that when you pull it up on a website or on the TEA website, it's a long list of text, right? It's just a wall of text pummeling you with the you've got to teach, you've got to teach, you've got to teach. For me, it's quadratic functions and matrices and all these things, right? There's nowhere in there that's like, and here's the fun way to do it, or
Right.
here's the awesome activities, which is some of the, goals of the HQIM, high quality instructional materials movement, and that's awesome, but that's kind of existing separately. When I'm in the classroom and I've got to hit these three teaks and I've got an hour and a half and it's the bell's going to ring, so there's a literal countdown going on. I might not feel like I can validate and give space for those fun, amazing, enthusiastic conversations that happen in the margins of the teaks, right? That really stretch, it might be like a deeper conceptual understanding of what I'm teaching, but it also could just be what's on the kids' minds that has nothing to do with math. Sometimes those are some of the greatest conversations. And I think maybe a lot of teachers are petrified of those conversations. A, because it's just sapping the literal time that I have, and I've got to hit my teaks. Or maybe there's something broader, which I think is going to be the next part, in like I'm petrified to talk about controversial issues, or I'm worried about reprisal if I say the wrong thing. And in that case, the principal has a huge effect, to answer your question, because my principal makes me feel safe for those amazing conversations that happen in the classroom, even if we're not, hitting our marks.
Yeah, and just as a follow-up on that, TEKS for our listeners is the acronym for the state standards. It technically stands for Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills. And those TEKS inform teachers what they have to teach in terms of the content. But as Lance was saying, it does not give us a guide as to how to teach it. And
That's
that's
exactly right.
where the art and the craft of instruction comes into play for sure. One of the other things that I heard the kids mentioned on the recording was the reference to a focus on all the rules. And I think the student might have been using the word propaganda inaccurately, maybe in the context of the comments. But if I'm understanding that student correctly, what they're sharing is that they feel oppressed by all of those rules that are in place and such a focus, a harp on, you know, keeping your hood off in the building or making sure your cell phone's in the backpack, which is now state law. And, you know, all of those little like micromanagey things about how to move about the building and the things that come inherently with controlling the masses, right? All of those rules and things are in place for student safety, for efficiency and all of those sorts of things, but it does. The student is right. I mean, if our focus even in the classroom is primarily on policing those things, then not only is it a time suck, a distraction from the opportunity to learn, but it, you know, it's one of those things we always talk about picking our battles. And to Lance's point that he was just sharing, I do think that there's a role for administrators to play in sort of setting the tone on the campus for the threshold on that? How far are we going to push this thing in the classroom? And at what point are we going to outsource that so we can get back to the instruction? And that's just part of learning how to manage the classroom in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's great stuff. And I think like for any of our listeners who are teachers or who are new to teaching, setting clear systems for routines, procedures, expectations, all those things. And elementary school looks different than middle school, that looks different from high school with regards to this. But every teacher is going to have to set clear expectations or rules, as the students put it, that might not be fun or interesting or or feel great. But I think the overemphasis or the over focus on micromanaging the students can create for a really boring environment. And I think it would behoove teachers to establish that culture at the beginning of the school year, but really make sure that the emphasis of this class is on high academic rigor and bringing the passion, bringing the relevancy to that teaching. If the students, I found in my experience as a teacher, if the students want to be in your class and they're excited about the material and they want to learn, the behavioral issues don't necessarily vanish. It's not magic, but they do lessen quite a bit. If you have the respect of the students, you're going to have less behavior management than otherwise. So one common trend I found in looking into boredom in the classroom was the issue of relevancy. A lot of students who were surveyed said they did not under they were bored in class because they did not see why what they were learning was relevant. I asked Matthew and Jameson about relevancy. Here's what they had to say.
It does feel like sometimes that whenever you're what you're learning in some classes, it's like, how is this going to apply to me in the real world?
On a base level, for the question is yes, I absolutely think that it does seem irrelevant because I don't think teachers are explaining it well enough on how this can actually tie into life. Because if, let's say, a kid goes into math class and the math teacher immediately just starts to talk to them about all this complex algebra, and the student is just left confused. And especially for most, they'll be like, they'll have no motivation to learn it if they don't know why they're learning it. So I absolutely think that.
Yeah, having taught 8th grade US history for a number of years, I definitely had a lot of experience with this challenge of getting my students to understand the relevancy of what they were learning. What about y'all? Has this been an issue for you?
I mean, I remember feeling the same way as a student. So I totally appreciate the perspective. And I think that on some level, we do need to acknowledge both the teachers and the students that there will be a point at which you reach an impasse sometimes. Like you're not going to see the relevance because you're in middle school and it will come later. There comes a threshold where you're like, you just got to trust me on this one, right? Like you're going to remember this.
I think that's really well said. I'm going to level with y'all. I have a slightly different perspective from both of you on this, I think, and maybe even different from these amazing kids that we're hearing from. I don't feel constricted or constrained to draw for my students a straight line from this skill, solving this equation, to that moment when they're 28 and they're going to use it in their job. It's unpredictable. We don't know what the world's going to be like or what job they're going to be in. And frankly, it's very unlikely that they'll have to solve a quadratic equation by hand at that point. I kind of move away from the why is this relevant conversation by posting a quote from one of my all-time favorite mathematicians on the board, which was from Henri Poincaré, a Frenchman from about 100 years ago, who says that the scientist does not study nature because it's useful to do so in his life. He does so because he takes pleasure in it, and he takes pleasure in it because it's beautiful. And that's it right there. The art of learning and the content of learning is pleasurable in and of itself. because I tell my kids every day that it is, and eventually they believe me, right? And it's because I really believe that. I love to learn. We hear one of the buzzwords in our profession is lifelong learner. I think a lot of teachers claim to be that and want their students to be that, but don't necessarily live it when they really indulge those conversations about, well, because I calculated the area of this rectangle, I'm going to be a great architect. It's just not so simple. And so I think we have to lean away from that and more towards the pleasure of learning, because that is what makes life worth living. That's kind of my personal belief.
That is huge. I'm so glad that you said that out loud. That's super inspiring for myself to hear, and I think for any instructional professional to hear at any level, because we're trying to identify the problem. Why is it boring? Well, the lacking love of learning is what makes learning is all about discovery, right? That's what you're talking about. And the process, not just the process, but the not knowing and the fun of uncovering. And so, if we want kids to buy in, we've got to remind them that it's fun to do so. So, I love that angle.
I agree 100% with you. I love that you said that. But that's exactly why I think there are so many problems with public education right now. That right there. And I think that this is actually more of a macro level issue. Look, education in terms of what we're learning in school hasn't changed in 75 years. We're using different tools. Those have evolved a little bit with technology, but a few elective classes might be different, but the core content is more or less the same. And this begs the question, why? To me, I think this speaks directly to what you were saying, Les. The fundamental purpose of education is just teach kids how to think. And to think critically. And in elementary school and middle school and high school, kids are essentially learning how their brains work and how they learn and process information and what they like in terms of as their personalities develop. But why are we stuck in the past in terms of what we're actually teaching them? And why are we teaching them things that are so boring? Right? I'm thinking of like seventh grade Texas history. That's a really boring class. It's a really boring curriculum. There's no question about it. No 12-year-old is going to be interested in those things. And it's so sort of like stymied by these cliques or whatever, these rules of what things the teacher has to teach, through the year, at what points in the school year, that to make that class really engaging and to spark that passion for learning, which you talked about, is really, really difficult. And I feel like there are just like so many contents out there that are like that. Like, and it begs me the question, why?
Well, I'm gonna be a little bit more combative than usual.
Yeah,
I don't
good.
agree. I don't think that Texas history, and I've never taught it, so I'm coming from a math perspective here, but I don't think that it's inherently boring. I think that the teaks on the page are inherently boring, but as Natalie mentioned a few minutes ago, it can come alive in the pedagogy and in the instructional approach. So I just don't agree. Going back to my math mindset, and also just hilarious that you asked us why we're so stuck in the past and then brought up history.
Yeah,
But in
oh
math, the history of the subject is thousands of years older than Texas history, right? And frankly, has not changed that much. Definitely has not changed in my lifetime, right? The 30 or so odd years that I've been working with algebra, but it hasn't really changed in 1,000 years, right? The fundamental concepts of algebra, maybe some of the notations have evolved and some of the concepts have gotten a little deeper, but it's the same. It's the same. The Pythagorean theorem was named after a man who may or may not have lived literally before the Common Era, right? And we still teach it. And so I can bring that alive despite the fact that it's old news. And it's inherent, it's like critical in the job. It is everything. At a macro level, we're not going to see those changed. You just have to know that stuff, right? You have to know this stuff. And I have to teach it, and I just have to find my creativity and innovation when I'm in front of the kids. So that's kind of my approach to that. Natalie, what do you think?
The irony of it all is that I think if we were to ask teachers the same thing about teaching, not just from the student perspective, but some teachers might feel like teaching is boring when they feel that they're so stringently limited to the parameters of the TEKS because they're so focused on pragmatic in you need to know about the details of this historical conflict. You need to know, that 1 + 1 = 2 and a lot more complex math than that. Like, you just need to
That's a
know.
hard problem.
Right. But, you're speaking to it perfectly, Lance, that is the irony to me is that that's what makes teaching fun is bringing it to life for the students. And so, for so many educators who are thinking that they're doing themselves a favor by making the same copies of the same worksheets every year with a timeline of events from Texas history, that is boring for the kids. But if you have the kids reenact the Battle of the Alamo or whatever, and you like bring that learning to life, think Miss Frizzle, Magic School Bus, right? Like that was all inspired by this notion of bringing the learning to life. And I know that that is easier to do in some contents than others, but I do think it can and should be done, and that's kind of the task before all of us. And it's exciting and inspiring to think about how fun that could be. Now, in practice, we're always up against time and resources and all of the unexpecteds that interfere, and then arguing with, little Johnny about putting a cell phone away or the hood, taking the hood off, like we were talking about earlier, how all of those things interfere. But I think a lot about when I was teaching English, Shakespeare in particular, but really any of those old texts, the classics, there's always this ongoing battle between schools of thought among the instructors. Like, do we replace with more relevant modern, text, or do we maintain some of the classics for the sake of the classic because there's something to be gleaned from that? And I think both can be true. It's just about the presentation. When I translated Shakespeare for my students in the way, like in modern day terms, and helped them see it in context in their modern world, like imagine if your bestie came up and said to you, da 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 da, how would you feel? That's how we did literary analysis. That's how I made it relevant to them. And side note, shout out to my sister Steph, who did the same for me when I had to pass Shakespeare's course in order to get my college degree, because she had to do the same thing for me because I didn't understand Shakespeare even in college. It was hard for me and is for most people. So, all of that to say that I think we're pointing to this bigger issue of all of the little nitpicky things and the trickle-down effect from the policies that are put in place. But that should not keep us, in spite of that, we should still be pursuing bringing learning to life for our students every day in whatever way we can.
I thought that when you teach Romeo and Juliet, you could just show them the Leonardo DiCaprio movie and that updates it inherently, right? Is that not how it works?
There are just so many ways to teach kids to embed math skills, reading skills, writing skills that, education could do a little bit more in terms of like creative thinking and innovative thinking in terms of the actual curriculum. I think we are way, way, way too stymied by standardized testing and by these TEKS. The idea of doing a reenactment of the Alamo is awesome. That would be great. But that takes weeks. You have 2 days to teach the Alamo. And if you don't go on that schedule, you get pressure from whomever. I just think that in education, we're not thinking about the curriculum in an innovative or in a creative way enough. Today, we're talking about why school is boring. So far, we've talked about teachers bringing the passion into their classroom. We've talked about ways to make the curriculum seem a little bit more relevant. We've talked about micromanaging and rules, and we've talked a little bit about the teaks and the star. I want to finish things off with what Matthew and Jameson had to say in terms of this prospect for change, and does school have to be boring?
Because of everything that we've talked about today, and the clear solutions that we've gave, I absolutely think that school can be more fun and engaging, and even less fun, just more tolerable. Just students can tolerate it more, or just feel more of a reason to learn this type of stuff. So I absolutely do think so.
Based on those guidelines, it's pretty strict, but I think at the end of the day, it's every teacher in school's job to try to use what they're given to try to make the classroom fun. Obviously, the schools have to help them a little more than they probably currently do because underpaid, understaffed, but I don't think it's impossible to have less boring classes in the future, even with the class sizes and the different learning styles. It's about finding a strategy that works for everyone, although we may not know what it looks like yet.
Absolutely. And kind of to tie up that, it doesn't necessarily mean that school is going to be fun, right? It doesn't mean that every single class is going to be fun and you want to go to every single class, but you'll just feel more of a reason to, and more of a reason to want to learn.
All right. On that note, thank you for listening to this episode of All Things Education. We appreciate your listening support. Whatever your role or proximity to education matters in Texas, we hope to hear from you. You can find us on Instagram at All Things Education Podcast, where you can follow, like, share podcast updates. And of course, you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to subscribe or follow the show to ensure that you never miss an episode, and share your favorites with anyone who you might think benefit from listening. Your support means a great deal to us. Natalie and Lance, as always, it's been a pleasure. Special thanks to our interviewees, Jameson and Matthew. Wishing you the best of luck in high school. Until next time.
Thank you.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you for listening to All Things Education.
Be sure to leave us a review and share the show with everyone you know.
If you liked what you heard, stay tuned for more compelling conversations with Natalie, Matthew, and Lance.
Until next time, Texas.